Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Final hour, fist pump time on the Fan Cam Twitch and YouTube. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, Peyton and Carter in the back. We are live on the Fan Cam Twitch, all of it. John Isner played the longest match in tennis history, most aces ever, fastest serve, 6'7" of them. Going to be in here live on the Fan Cam Twitch and YouTube at 9:20. We'll crosstalk with a KMC masterpiece at 9:40. But thanks to the Tolos, let me give the exact proper credit here, who sent the Todd Archer update. It was Daniel, Tolo Daniel. Todd Archer taking us inside the Brian Schottenheimer hire. And let's skim through this. Jerry was playing coy with Schottenheimer in the meeting room, saying, you know, you'd be a first-time head coach. You know, we're hanging around the rim. We got a team in place that can get there right now. I just can't take the risk of doing it with a first-timer.
That's what he always says.
Some seconds passed. Jerry smiled, said, you got the job. So then they toasted and celebrated. So that was Jerry trying to mess around with Schottenheimer. Here's the piece of news that we've all been searching for that Todd Archer is reporting. Remember, he's the one who said Mike was making $8 a year, not $5 a year, like we all thought, for a number of years. McCarthy was seeking a 5-year deal. Jerry was sticking with 3. At an impasse, both sides agreed it was time to move on. McCarthy was seeking 5. Jerry was sticking with 3. I got to take Jerry Jones' side on this. I thought 2 would have been insulting. I think 3 would have been fair. And I would have hated a 3-year extension just to go through more of this, where I feel like they hit their ceiling here with McCarthy. And it even makes me angry. Even though I'm taking Jerry's side, it makes me angry that Jerry's first choice was to have McCarthy back, status quo, on a 3-year deal. So I can't even give him credit if Schottenheimer does great, because his first choice was McCarthy on 3. But for my McCarthy, I'm going to unfortunately probably sound like Bobby here. For my McCarthy to think he could wield that big of a stick in 2 different places, here with a 5-year extension and then in New Orleans with the personnel control, either Mike's delusional, he got terrible advice from his agent, or the RJ Choppy possibility, someone had to give him the perfect deal to make him stick around to coach. You know, like,
yep.
It's like if we all win the lottery, right? I'm walking into the boss's office and I'm saying, here's the number to keep me. It's probably gonna float on the edge of unreasonable, but that's what it's got to take for you to stop me from sitting my fat ass at home on the couch for the rest of my life. So if Mike McCarthy could be thinking, I was speaking about me, fat ass, not Mike. Mike McCarthy could be like, yo, I'm set for life. I'm good to go. You got to make it a deal I cannot say no to for me to do this. Because 5 years is absurd.
Here's what I think what was Mike's thought process. He knows this team is in a rebuild.
Are they?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know about that.
They're not in a teardown. They're in a regrouping.
Okay.
This is 2011.
Oh, I thought it was 2025.
This is the 2011 season.
Oh.
Where they were 3 straight 8-8s. They had to redo the offensive line. Colombo got old. Kozier got old. Davis. Flo. They all got old.
Yep. Doug Free.
Tyrod's gone. Zach's gone. Everybody got old, right? This is the regrouping. Now, it may, you know, you may pop 1 year. But the reality is, I think Mike looked at it and said, if I do a 3-year deal, by the end of that 3 years, I'm just getting this team set for somebody else. I can't coach this team for just 3 years. We're not going to be ready. we're not going to be ready to win.
Now, the Cowboys are saying they're around the rim.
Always think they're around the rim.
You know, Steve Spurrier, two others told Jerry, someone who wanted the job, not Spurrier. The other said, you guys got a team. You're right there.
Yeah.
Which you know that they believe.
They believe that because Jerry picks the players. So he absolutely believes that. If I'm McCarthy, I can't take 3 years here because I know that 3 years we're not ready to win the way we need to. Because you need darts. You need a bunch of darts in this thing. With the cap situation, so last year was what it was. I assume this coming year is going to be about the same thing. You know, there's health issues with Dak. I've got to go for the five. You know, also, from everybody we have talked to around the league, it appears the rest of the league has a much higher perception of McCarthy than the people in DFW do.
Well, not too many around the league. There were seven openings. He's unemployed.
Yeah, but he was a finalist for two of them. Right? It was him. And
I mean, I think he didn't get interviewed in New York. He didn't get interviewed in Vegas. He didn't get interviewed in Jacksonville.
No, it was Chicago and New Orleans.
Yeah, many people,
it's the top one. One of the jobs was the top one.
Yeah, but everyone thinks Ben Johnson's job.
Yeah, he was like their fallback.
Yeah.
If Johnson took the Raiders job, Mike's coach at Chicago.
I don't know if he was second. I don't know if he was runner-up. They interviewed 50,000 people. I don't know how much of that was agent favor or not. But anyway.
Yeah, all the media members were like, guys.
Like, Mike McCarthy's not going to coach again, I don't believe.
I think it's probably less likely that he does because he's old. Yeah. He's in the 60s now.
Go ahead.
But, they just hired Brian Schottenheimer. And I went back and looked at Marty. You know, Marty ended his tenure in Kansas City in 98. And he was about 59 years old. And then he gets his job in Washington. He was out 3 years. I didn't realize he was out of the league for 3 years before he got the Washington job. And then he was there for 1 year. Then he goes immediately to San Diego. So we've seen coaches. Pete Carroll just got a job. Put it this way. McCarthy was more wanted this year than Bill Belichick was the last 2 years combined.
Yeah.
Like, I think the people in DFW just have a sour viewpoint of Mike. Whereas, you don't get interview opportunities.
Be careful how you finish this sentence. Come on, you know that they're BS interviews.
Yeah, I think the Rooney Rule interviews are BS interviews.
Yeah.
I don't think Mike's a BS interview.
Okay. It's going to say a lot when he doesn't coach again. I don't think it's just because he's old. Like, Pete Carroll got a job. If Mike McCarthy, is this great coach, he should be hired or, I think, get more interest this past offseason. He's not going to coach again.
He had a lot. But here's the thing. If he got fired on that Monday when they should have done it, how many more opportunities does he get? Interviews does he get? I think he probably...
Who filled their spots?
Oh, New England filled it.
He wasn't going to get that.
What? He was not going to get that, no. No, yeah. No. Nobody had necessarily filled their job yet by the time he was. But they had already gone through the process. They had liked their candidates. They had pinpointed guys. I get it. I think it's less likely that he coaches again than that he does coach again. I think a lot of that, if he was 55, I think he does.
Jerry Jones on Deion from Todd Archer's article. Do you think I need to interview Deion to know what we have there? It was just a conversation about the team and his boys and conversations with his boys. So you talked to Deion Sanders about his kids, not about the Cowboy job, and you just wanted all that attention from Adam Schefter during halftime of the playoff game, which is what everyone basically knew anyway, that it was a PR stunt. Well, not everyone. Ed Werder fell for it. There's a lot of us who were like, oh my God, is this real? Is this legit? Because Ed reported enamored. Both sides were enamored that Deion would take it, and Jerry was enamored with the idea. So that was false. Just because Deion Sanders played for you doesn't mean you know how he would be as a coach. When you go, do you think we need to talk to know what I would have in a coach? How the hell do you know how Deion Sanders coaches? Are you kidding me? You know what Deion Sanders would do with NFL player personnel, dealing with personalities, managing a salary cap, recruiting guys, what type of schemes and system he would run? Are you kidding? That reeks of so much arrogance, but it's not even arrogance. It's just fake. It wasn't even real. It was all fake.
It was never real.
It was never real.
They were never going to hire Deion here.
Yeah. All right. One option was for Brian Schottenheimer to remain as the offensive coordinator and play caller, but as he spoke to the front office for the first time on January 21st, the Joneses dug deeper into the possibility of him becoming a head coach. As they discussed the other candidates, Jerry Jones Jr. chimed in, backing Schottenheimer. Quote, this is from Jerry Jr. If we went that way away from Schottenheimer, as much as we're going down the path, there'd be some heartbreak there for us. Man, that sounds like a Jerry Sr. quote. Schottenheimer came in for a second interview the next day. The discussion was centered around the changes he would make on offense, the type of defense he would want, practice schedules, and the coaching staff. Steven said the more we met, the more we wanted to meet. I think that was helping us come to a conclusion on what the decision should be. Schottenheimer's message was getting through. The continuity through change. I know the players, I know the building, I know our strengths, I know our weaknesses, I know our issues. And more we got into conversations, sitting around and just discussing different things, I wanted it even more. So here we go. Jerry spoke with Steve Spurrier. Pete Carroll, Schottenheimer under Carroll. What?
That's the fact that he talked to Steve Spurrier. The hell are those two talking about?
Around dinner time on Friday, the Cowboys, remember, this came out at 9 o'clock at night.
Of course Steve likes him. He's a visor guy.
And is Eberflus a visor guy too?
Yes.
Oh, two visor guys, Choppy. Around dinner time on Friday, the Cowboys and Schottenheimer's agent, the famous Jimmy Sexton, first discussed a contract. 2 hours later, the framework of the four-year deal was in place. The public reaction was less than flattering, including Michael Irvin. Jerry and Steven heard the criticism, but believed Schottenheimer was the person best qualified for the job. A little after 11 a.m. on Monday, Schottenheimer walked off the elevator in the Star and passed by all the trophies. In the back, all the players had the press conference, and that's what I'm getting to right now in this piece or article from Todd Archer.
It's the whole thing is surprising, the way it all went down, the way everything happened. It's
said he interviewed for six jobs along the way, first coming in 07 for the Miami Dolphins. So there we go. That was it. Basically, the biggest thing that comes out of that for me, Jerry offered three, McCarthy wanted five.
Wanted five. And I wonder what the Witten stuff was, if there was any Witten stuff, if that was just it.
Doesn't seem like that's happening. Man, was that a media creation or things not working out in their discussions and talks?
My assumption is that Witten, his kid's got 2 years up to school. Like, he's his coach. He probably wants to see that through. I expected to be on staff eventually. If he's not on staff after his kids graduate, then he never wants to do it. It's a grind. And, yeah. You know, do you really want to start at the bottom? Like, where's he going to start? Tight ends coach is not the highest in the totem pole. Like, where do you want to start? That's a problem or question, I should say.
Of course, Will McClay extended yesterday. Many Cowboy fans celebrating that. And then adding to the staff with Dave Borgonzi, linebackers coach, Aaron Whitecotton, defensive line coach, and Andre Curtis, defensive passing game coordinator. Whitecotton spent the last 4 years as DL coach for the Jets. And here he is joining up with Matt Eberflus and Stephen Jones, stressing the running game for the offensive coordinator position and wanting to marry up Brian Schottenheimer's passing concepts with what they do on the ground. So there we go. Inside the Star, Todd Archer. Hijacking RJ Choppy's baseball nuggets.
Rude.
That we will get to tomorrow on the home of the Rangers. But we literally have our biggest guest ever in studio next, live on the FanCam, Twitch, and YouTube. John Eisner on the big event taking place in the Metroplex. We'll get to it next. All right, buckle up. This has been electric in the commercial break. I promise you're going to fall in love with this dude. In 5 minutes, he has experienced what I have dealt with for 15 years with RJ Choppy. This is DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan, and welcome the big fella. We started off in the first minute arguing about height. I said we're going to have our biggest ever guest in studio, and they came up. They said, you've never had Dirk in here? And I was like, you're 4 inches shorter than Dirk. Four. Yep. And he's like, no, I'm not.
You know, we had the big show. with the Big Show.
Yeah, yeah, but
is, but that was downstairs.
Is he like a little like kind of overrated tall? Like Undertaker's not a pure 6'10", right? He's like, is Big Show's wide.
He's wide. We compared hands with Big Show.
Oh, yeah.
And him.
Yeah.
And
I got cat paw.
It was a sight to behold.
Yeah.
I don't think his fingertips got to his calluses on his palm.
Kind of like Andre the Giant holding the beer can.
Yeah, exactly like it was.
All right, John, give us the exact pronunciation of the last name because people argue with me about it.
No, most people get it wrong. It's Isner.
Isner.
Not Eisner, yeah.
And that is what, in terms of
background.
Oh, wow, there we go. I believe it's German.
Okay.
German descent.
All right, now recap for the audience what has got you fired up. We're going to talk Dallas Open, all that stuff, your career, but, dude, you're a sports talk guy, big time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I walked in and First Take is on, and Cam Newton's now a part of First Take, and I love Cam Newton. I'm a Panthers fan. I'm from North Carolina. I live here now. Live super close to here. I've been here for 8 years. But you grow up in North Carolina, you become a Panthers fan. That's my team. So obviously I'm partial to Cam Newton. I thought he had an incredible career, especially that one MVP season. And then I was told he was the biggest bust of all time. Was that the quote?
No, last 20 years.
The last 20 years. Biggest, well, then Jamarcus Russell was in the last 20 years.
Biggest bust. RJ told him biggest bust as a number one pick last 15 to 20
years. Yeah, RJ, that's just completely insane.
I trolled you a little bit with that one, but he was a bust.
Yeah, but he's got all his Tennessee Vols gear on, right? So it's like he, you know, he doesn't probably
Then he called Mike Vick a bust.
He called Mike Vick a bust, like not a bust.
Who has the most fumbles in NFL history?
Vick?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's not a bust. Fans. You could argue a tick overrated, but like not a bust.
To me, when you're like, the number one pick in the draft as a quarterback, you've got to average like 10 wins a year for your career and make the playoffs like every year.
John, who on the forget him for a second.
Apparently,
who on the tour you sit around and have these sports debates with? Who else on the tour can talk like this?
Okay, so a lot of the guys that are old retired farts like myself, Andy Roddick, James Blake, Marty Fish, those players, sort of the older guard of American tennis. Right now, Tommy Paul, top 10 in the world. He's actually from New Jersey area, so he's a big Eagles fan right on the border.
Okay.
And Francis Tiafoe is a big Commanders fan, although I will question his fandom. I think he just likes to show up for the photo ops. He was there for the NFC Championship game, so forth and so on. Anything DC sports related for Foe. Claims he's a Capitals fan. I don't think he watches much hockey. But,
okay.
Ovechkin, I mean.
Of course. I mean, the Capitals are hot right now, the number one in the league. But, you know, so Taylor Fritz, he doesn't act like he's a massive sports fan, but he's a LA Chargers guy. So, we got to, and then there's Riley Opelka, who is my height.
6'7".
every bit of 6'11", and he is an interesting guy. He's not like a massive sports fan. He's more of a fashion/art connoisseur. Okay. He goes to art galleries and fashion shows like all the time in his spare time. He'll fly to Europe if he's got 4 days, and he's got all these connections. He's real dialed in that scene. And he'll go to Milan for like 2 days to a fashion show. It's crazy.
Wow.
But he likes it, and he's unique, and I respect it.
Give us your opinion of the Dallas Cowboys and the Dallas Cowboy fan base.
You know, like now
you've been living around here for
how long? Exactly. So it's like obviously they're, of course, polarizing. You either love them or you hate them. Now that I've in Dallas, I don't know. It's all about the makeup of the team, right? Like, I personally like Dak Prescott a lot. He's the face of the team. So I don't mind the Cowboys. And I personally like that hire. They could have gone for the obviously splashy hire, and it just would have been more of a media circus. They went sort of a meat and potatoes hire from within. And I actually kind of like it. And I like Schottenheimer's first interview as well as head coach. But I think the fan base is. I remember going to Panthers games growing up in Charlotte, and when they would play the Cowboys, and it was pretty nauseating because the stadium would get taken over. But then is obviously the flip side is the Cowboys stadium gets taken over when, you know,
the Chiefs
or the Steelers or San Fran comes to town. So I don't know. Cowboys fans are obviously all over the country, but there's a lot of, you know, anytime they have a home game, it's an interesting atmosphere there.
John Isner in studio, Dallas. Open is coming at you here on Sean and RJ 105 through the Fan. So, do you go NFL or college first since you're a Georgia Bulldog? Well, give me the top four sports you love.
Yeah.
No tennis included.
Yeah, no tennis. That's fine. We don't have to talk about tennis. So, man, I don't want to be that guy, but I think college football has just been a little tougher to digest the last couple years. I think without the transfer portal, okay. It's just hard to.
Who were the big dogs when you were in school there?
Okay, we were just talking about that. I was talking about that with Jonathan Ford. I was there with Stafford for a little bit, and then when I was a freshman, it was like, remember David Green, David Pollock?
Oh, yeah.
AJ Green was there for a little bit, went towards the end of my career at Georgia. Some great teams. I know Sean Moreno running the ball. Thomas Brown was running the ball.
Oh, yeah.
So, did you get there in 01?
03 was my freshman year. So I think I had 1 year of David Green. DJ Shockley. Yeah. I might have missed David Green by a year, but remember DJ Shockley? Yeah, they had some great teams. But I had some, as a student there, I had some bad luck. They couldn't quite get over Florida. I think like Tebow was there at the time.
What SEC school do you hate the most?
Probably Florida, but there haven't been that much of a threat lately. I mean, Georgia's the king with Kirby in charge. I might learn to really dislike Tennessee more if they can get a little better, but they're not a threat.
Especially after
of course.
Not a threat. Not wearing a threat. All your orange today, too.
It's funny because, like,
you were a threat this year for a little bit.
I actually almost went to Tennessee. Yeah. I actually got a lot of respect. Knoxville is one of the coolest places, one of the coolest campuses in the country.
Really?
Bar none. Yeah.
A lot of hills.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like steps, it's a bad place to be.
Beautiful, though.
Really bad. But it's funny. It's like when I was in school, I was in Tennessee, 97 to 02, 5-year plan. Bama sucked, and Georgia was like, kind of like, they were like gnats, right? They were annoying. They never really did anything to you. And then as soon as I left, everything flipped.
Yeah.
And Georgia became really good with Mark Richt, and then Alabama obviously with Saban.
Did you get it? When was that championship with T. Martin? What year
98.
Was that? So you okay?
I was there.
All right, good for you.
That was
fun. Who was your, you get a little giddy, fellow athlete giddiness when you met them? Or would still want to meet someone? The last time you were starstruck?
He's the biggest legend in Dallas, 41, Dirk. I played a lot of hoops growing up. I'm almost his height.
Yeah.
Now I've become friends with him because he's a big tennis guy.
Yes.
Loves tennis.
Yes. Have you ever played with him?
Absolutely. Play with him a bunch.
He's got game.
Doesn't move that well. Oh, he's got a great forehand. Backhand's a little suspect. Of course, a good serve. But no, he loves tennis. He loves getting out there. It's one of his big forms of exercise.
Are you into pickleball?
We were talking about that right before. I mean, a little bit. I don't like a lot of tennis players or tennis. I'm not a tennis purist, but that really I don't scoff at it. I have a strong disdain for pickleball.
It's fun.
I like playing, but I mean, it's like you can't compare it to tennis.
No.
Joke. I mean, come on, right? But I like pickleball. It's fun to play. It really is. But I mean, tennis is the king. It's like not even a comparison.
I feel bad. Like I've only played pickleball like twice, but when you play doubles, I mean, you just try to rip the ball, and it's always some grandma on the other side.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I can't really go hard.
Well, but pickleball has it's you could someone 65 can compete with someone 20.
Yeah,
get the ratings together, and it's you can get a. Get a good game out of that.
I want to tie in tennis and football because a lot of people are complaining that the Bills and Josh Allen got cheated. Why isn't there a chip in the football? Why don't we have the tennis technology of the review? Is it as awesome and as foolproof as we think? Like the calls, you never second guess. I'm just talk about that comparison and how you guys do it.
Well, you can second guess them, the calls on the tennis court, because there's not many tournaments have actual linesmen on the court anymore. I don't know if there are any. Yeah, they don't exist anymore. Everything is Hawkeye Live, or there's a couple different systems out there where the lines are called automatically, and there's a robot voice out. If it's out, then the ball's out. You can't argue that because there's no one to argue against. There's no
right.
They'll replay it if it's close, just for the fans.
Yeah.
But in the past, obviously, you thought umpires got it wrong all the time on the tennis courts. I really think tennis is leading the charge in all of sports in terms of technology and getting calls right and taking the human error part out of the game.
Yeah.
You think football would, they've got to be able to implement something. Obviously, when there's 22 people piled in trying to, I don't know. It seems like there should be something better than the old eye test.
What was your
chain?
See if the ball got across that yellow line.
What's your, I want you to guess his fastest serve ever. I want to see.
Okay, so I need a frame of reference.
No frame of reference.
What's the league average?
No, I just want you to guess.
All right. You know what? My first shot was a shot of 151.
Okay.
I'll say 151.
What's your top speed?
That's
average?
A hell of a guess.
It, not bad.
It was like 157 or 56.
Here's my question, though.
Something like
how good are you guys really at seeing the lines? If someone's hitting 150 at you, mm-hmm. you feel like your eye is that good versus the technology and the umpire to get the calls right? Like, how out of 10?
Oh, no. The technology is better than our eyes. But prior to this technology in tennis,
you were 150 mile per hour.
No, 156.
156.
Six. It was just the world record.
But you see how he acted like he did? He's like, what was it?
No, it's 56 or 57. I can't remember.
At that rate,
150.
It's a blur anyway.
But I was in Australia and it was in kilometers. So it didn't quite register to me that I hit because it was like 230.
Plus the gravitational pull of the earth under the equator. It doesn't.
157.
Okay, hang on real quick. He stood in against Derek Kong, good buddy of ours, major league pitcher. I don't know if you've ever done that. If amateur tennis players stood in against your serve, like, are we getting knocked out in the throat? Like, how many times?
You could. If I go body, yeah.
Yeah.
It depends on where you're standing. If you're standing on the baseline and I go body, yeah, I'm likely to knock you over.
What do you think there'd be more of a chance of, like, putting a racket on your serve or a bat on a baseball?
I think a racket on the serve is easier if you have no experience.
Yeah.
Because we're further away serving the ball. And the baseball pitchers, they're close, man.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's like, you know, no shot. Not in a million years could I get a bat on a Clayton Kershaw curveball, fastball, not in a million years. And I would be so scared too.
So that's one of the questions, like, you know, because pitchers are throwing the ball harder than ever. Do they move the mound back? As, you know, when a tennis court was formed in whatever year it was, mm-hmm. I mean, the serve was probably
so much
a
slower.
Fraction of what it is today. Mm-hmm. Is that something that they would consider as lengthening or widening the court?
No. Tennis is tennis. It's got its tradition. They can, if anything, tennis would tinker with the rules of doubles just to make doubles at the pro level more attractive, and they're always kind of doing that. But no, they shouldn't. Tennis should stay the same.
We always talk about youth sports and, you know, the numbers game in Little League and what's coming up and lacrosse and this and that. Where are we with youth tennis? Like, is the talent shooting up? Is the participation shooting up? The young kids that you see coming onto the tour? Like, where are we with that participation and growth?
I think there has been the last like 10 years, there has been an uptick in participation. And that's in large part of if we have on the American side, on the men's and the women's side, if we have very attractive pro players for these kids to watch and for, you know, these guys and girls to be competing deep into Grand Slams, that really, really helps things. So I think
you're talking about attractive like looks?
No, well, both. That helps too. I was not talking about that. I'm talking about attractive games and they're going deep into our biggest tournaments, which are always on TV with a worldwide audience. That's how you're going to get kids to watch and want to play our sport. And I do think there's been an uptick in that recently. We have a lot of amazing players on the men's side, probably the best crop of men's players we've had in 15, 20 years, easily.
Wow.
As far as, you know, the whole crop of players, and the women have always been strong, obviously led by Serena Williams for all those years. And we just had Madison Keys win the Australian Open. So the women have always been solid, but the men are starting to catch up.
Is that your way of saying, like, Federer's overrated because he didn't have the
opportunity? Yeah, you would probably say that Fed is overrated. You would probably try
would
to make that argument.
I get him, John.
He only won 22 Grand Slams.
I could argue that that Joker might be better. I could make the argument.
Yeah, you could. I'm sure you could, yeah.
I could make the argument. Yes.
Who was your,
I don't think I will.
Who was your tennis idol?
Pete Sampras.
Okay, that's right, baby.
Yeah, had to be
Sampras
Pete.
Sampras over Agassi.
What?
Yes.
I'm with you. I like them both, and I've fortunately been able to get to know both of them. But for me, it's Pete. Like, his athleticism was unmatched. His serve volley, his chip charge, his volleys, his jumping overhead. Like, he was just the best to watch for me. His body hair, his tongue out when he would serve.
How do you stack up Pete and Rogers with, you know, similar games?
Similar games. Rogers, you know, way better. 22 Grand Slams to 14. He played longer. Pete retired early, and Pete retired. Not many people remember this. He retired on top. He won the U.S. Open and said bye.
Let's
and he won the U.S. Open. Think about that. I think it was like early 30s or something. And That was it. He did his press conference at this mandatory press conference, and he did nothing. No press tour, nothing. Flew back to L.A., and that's it.
Is he still married to that girl?
Bridget Wilson?
Yeah.
Was it Bridget Wilson?
I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about the Dallas Open. Yep. We heard that you were a really, really strong influence and force in terms of making this happen. Set it up for our listeners.
Yeah, so the Dallas Open is here. It's up in Frisco at the Star this year. Qualifying starts on Saturday. Main draw starts on Monday, and it concludes on Super Bowl Sunday. The first 3 years of the tournament were right in the neighborhood at SMU, at their indoor tennis center. It was really amazing what SMU was able to do, how to transform their indoor tennis center, which is, by the way, one of the nicest indoor tennis centers I've ever seen. It's where I would always practice the last 7 years. But they were able to construct a center court into the existing building on the SMU's campus at their indoor courts. The tournament was very successful, especially as far as tickets are concerned. And the ATP Tour recognized that and awarded the tournament a 500-level sanction on the ATP Tour. So what that means is the first 3 years of the tournament at SMU, it was an ATP 250-level event, which means the winner gets 250 points. Now it's a 500-level event, which is a huge upgrade for the tournament and for the city and for everyone involved. The top of the food chain on the ATP Tour, the ATP 1000, winner gets 1,000 points, blah, blah, blah. But it's a big step up. I mean, the total prize money in the first three editions at SMU, the purse was about $800,000. Now the purse is $2.6 million.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a big jump up. The players are playing for more money, more points, more everything. And it's just great. The field is strongest it's ever been. Three players in the top 10 in the world, two of them American. We have a Norwegian, number five in the world. Casper Ruud is coming to town to play. Ben Shelton's playing. He made the semifinals of the Australian Open. Francis Tiafoe is playing. So the tournament's loaded with talent, and it's a full 32 draw. So right out of the gate on Tuesday night, you're going to get great matches.
Awesome. Ford Center at the Star. Tickets on sale now. DallasOpen.com. I was a little worried about you coming in studio. I didn't know. Tennis, this... You need a. Do you do a podcast?
That's funny. I do a podcast. It's tennis. It's tennis centric. It's tennis centric.
Okay.
It's called. Thanks for the plug. It's called Nothing Major. Me and three of my buddies. We never won a Grand Slam.
I get you.
A couple of us were close, but we call it Nothing Major because between the four of us, we never were able to win a Grand Slam. But tennis centric. But I could honestly talk about.
Dude, you need to be on. You need to do.
We didn't even get in the NHL. It's probably my favorite sport. So
please come back.
Yeah,
anytime to talk anything.
Have me as a guest. I'm pretty comfortable in this seat.
John Isner killing it here. Spittle outside, waiting for the autograph. We have
him
here.
I don't know yet.
I guarantee you, he's creeping somewhere around here. He's our boss. He's a very good tennis player.
Hall of Famer.
I'm a high school mixed doubles tennis champion myself.
There you go. Congrats. That's awesome.
So there, yes. Well, I wasn't good enough to compete all men's. Let's crosstalk with the KMC Masterpiece next.
Mavericks fourth in the league in block shots this year. Here's an assist pass. Possibly it is. Grimes. He hits bottom on a three-pointer, and PJ's tied his career high with 7 assists.
Let's cross-talk with the KMC Masterpiece. I'm telling you, John Isner just hired.
John in on the cross-talk. He's still here.
Yeah, John, come into the cross-talk if you want. He wanted to get into hockey. He's like, we didn't even talk Stars. That was an amazing interview to promote the Dallas Open. Thanks to everyone for setting it up. Cross-talk with KMC on 105.3 The Fan. Good morning, Corey Majors. What's coming up?
Guys, we do have Eddie George today at 11. We also have Keith Law joining the show today.
Ooh,
so that's going to be fun. And
Sebastian
also,
Walcott's the most awesome.
Sean, I found out 19th. The sandwich shop that I've been wanting to go to in New Orleans, was told it was closed, is open. They are open for Super Bowl week because it's a hospitality city, you know? So they're opening
big
it up for that week. They also
big game
week. Not TV's Joe Trahan told me that they serve those sandwiches next door and at the airport.
Now, what is the sandwich?
It's a muffaletta. It's where the muffaletta started.
What is that?
It's got like a sourdough bread. Slice that. It's got the Choppy knows all the Italian.
Cuts.
Yeah, it's like all the cold cuts. And
Choppy,
it's got provolone on top.
I've heard of it.
And it's got an olive, like an olive mixture on top. And
like
it's
an olive oil spread,
and this
which
thing,
is popular in New Orleans.
This thing's like this big.
Oil spread.
There is a video. I'll send you the link to the video. This thing's giant. So I'm really excited about this. I'm going there Tuesday after the show. That's where I'll be there Tuesday right after the show.
Ham and salami, provolone, olive dressing, great bread.
Yes, the bread is fantastic. So,
did you say grape bread or grape bread?
Great. Okay. Only you would think grape bread.
That's true.
The way I think about a lot of the things you guys say that are delicious. It sounds the same to me.
What was the artichoke dip he did? What was the
Spanish artichoke?
Yeah, I can see that.
Spanish artichoke dip, because I was like, I thought that was weirdly specific.
But it was spinach artichoke.
Yeah, spinach artichoke. And I thought, does every country like have their own version of this?
I think it makes sense. I can see that.
And then they both stopped me and were like, hold on, what did you say?
Spinach doesn't belong in a dip anyway. It's a health food.
It's a good and you can't have health foods in a dip?
No.
Because there's no healthy dip, right?
I mean, no. I wouldn't think
Fridge
so.
Onion's good.
Tomato,
Fridge
that's onion's salsa. The best dip. Salsa's a healthy dip.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that true?
It's just tomato and onion.
Sodium. You got to have salt.
For the most part, you are going to have salt in it to give it flavor. But for the most part, you're just having
the tomatoes, onions, cilantro,
the chips,
jalapeno.
Yeah.
The
chips the problem, right?
It's what you dip in there.
Any lime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you could dip cucumber in there.
Yeah.
It'll be healthy.
You don't want to, but you could.
You can be healthy.
What did you guys think of Adam Silver's possible NBA suggestions? Did you see it?
Yes. The 10-minute quarter, it's fascinating because he's throwing out ideas, and I appreciate the way he's doing it. He's throwing out ideas, but being like, I understand that this particular idea is not super popular, and he's not saying, we're going to do this. It's the same way I felt about the golden at bat.
Manfred.
And I don't think...
The question was literally... What's the craziest thing? Dan Patrick said, what's the craziest thing that's been floated out there?
And so I think that gets dropped to test public and player opinion about
it.
Without specifically saying,
yes,
in 2027, we're going to do this.
It's exactly what the Cowboys did with Brian Schottenheimer. They just actually went up and hired him.
Sure.
And then they're like,
all right, nobody likes it. Friday news.
Yeah, let's really tick them off.
It would probably take a lockout or strike. And so I don't want this. I don't want basketball to have to stop for half a year again like it did in 99. But at this point, I do think... The NBA needs to make contracts way more. You get money for wins. You get money for playing in games. So like, there's nothing Luka can do about this injury. This is a real injury that he's trying to recover from. But they intentionally sit out 10 to 20 games a year. And I'm not saying Luka is doing that now. And I'm not just picking on Luka. You talked about Joel Embiid. What was the stat yesterday?
Joel Embiid has played in 446 games and missed 400 games.
In his career.
And since he's been...
He was doing handstands yesterday.
And he's making $60 million a year. Well, if you were to say your base salary, because you are great, your base salary is $15 million. You have a chance to make $100 million in your career, in this year, in this season, but it's all incentive-based.
Yeah.
And then you will see players. And then also, I mean, I think there needs to be incentive for owners in all sports. I would say this for a NFL game, and I know there's really not tanking in the NFL. It's not something they have to worry about, but there's only 17, so you have to make it extreme. Hey, every game, there's $10 million on the line for each owner. You have to write a check to the other team for $10 million for losing the game. And you get a check for $10 million for winning the game.
But it's interesting because the way he described it, and y'all can correct me if you think I'm off on this, was not for those competitive notions or the live audience. It was strictly for the TV window. Because one of the things, the two-hour window. Yeah, because he made sure to say, like, this is how international basketball does it. And I get all that. But then he also goes, and then you can fit it into a two-hour window. So I don't think any of these address the complaints of ticket-buying people who are like, no, I don't care about the quarters being shorter. I care about me and my kids showed up to see this play.
What about the style of play? Is the thought like, okay, if the games are shorter, the stars can be out there more, or maybe they're not going to take nights off? That doesn't address that.
No, and I don't believe that at all.
If you're playing, let's just say Luka averages 30 minutes a game in a 48-minute game.
Yeah.
He's still probably going to play 30 minutes a game in a 40-minute game.
Yeah.
So he's not going to reduce his time playing. You know, they even said it's not for the people in the arena. Nobody cares. When you go to a baseball game, you don't care how long it is.
Right. So you care a little bit because on a school night,
traffic.
You're like, gosh, I hope this game ends by, let's say, 9:45 so I can be home by 10:30.
So Luka's he averages 35 a night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in 48. So you make it
33, 40. I bet. Okay. He'd maybe get 2 extra minutes of rest.
Yeah.
I don't know if I did this correctly. I tried to do the math when Choppy tried to
don't
do
the
math.
Don't ask RJ for the math.
It was 13 games.
That's what I got too. Okay. I didn't want to say it because I wasn't sure.
It was like 13 games that this would shave off of the season, that essentially.
That's my favorite thing that just happened. But y'all are like, yes.
And guess what?
That means it's 69 games, baby.
And then the other thing is, if you get fouled on a 3, you get 2 free throws. Like, I'm not understanding that. They really just need to get rid of free throws. That's been my idea. Don't stop down the game. Figure out a solution to that. Not stop down. I don't care about watching people shoot free throws.
What about this one? What about this? This was my idea. You tally up the free throws each quarter. And then at the end of the quarter, whatever the difference is between the teams, if it's two, that team takes 2 free throws and that's it. No, that way you don't bog it down during the game. If it's 8,
we got to stop and watch them shoot 8 in a row.
Sure, yeah,
that's a lot.
They're not gonna make
people are gonna be like, "Hey, ref, it's up to 6. Let's draft the 6."
Yeah, but why would you get 2 free throws for a 3-point shot? I guess that's to move it faster.
So I mean, you can give them a 3-point, like if you foul a 3. But I don't want more incentive to shoot 3s.
Yeah, wouldn't you just extend out the line or?
Well, I guess the 2 free throws would reduce 3. That.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
You know, like,
but at least it's 3s to get fouled.
It would stop the James Harden kickout leg.
And they did work on that in years past, though.
3-point flop.
I did love the game last night. I thought it was a very entertaining Dallas Maverick game.
Zion played. Great win.
And Zion played.
Future Dallas.
I mean, you're talking about free throws. They gave the ball to Clay to shoot free throws, and he winged it out of bounds to like put the game in jeopardy. And Clay had a good game. He had some huge 3-point shots, but. I watch the game and I get that and one change. We're like, let's do it like and one. We've gone so extreme now. At one point, and it was the Mavericks in the fourth quarter, Najee Marshall was trying to run time off the clock. So they roll the ball in bounds and New Orleans is stupid and they're not kind of pressing up because they need time to come back. Najee picks up the ball and takes 4 steps with nobody on him before he dribbles. And I was like, this is insane that he just picked up the ball, looked up the court, slowly took steps. And you're like, it's gotten so extreme that you can, now it's a 4-step league. Now there's no such thing as carrying a basketball.
Yeah.
Double dribble isn't a thing. It's triple dribble. You can double dribble. They just don't want triple dribble.
They don't even call it in 12-year-old basketball anymore.
It's amazing watching kids dribble a basketball in high school and you're like, this just isn't right. I get that you want to have creativity, but it's gotten so extreme that maybe I'm just an old fart now and I kind of am with this, but I'm like, it's so extreme watching the violations in basketball that it's made it like it's not the same anymore.
Well, I need to correct something. Before we were saying why Caitlin Clark was passing on the NBA All-Star 3-point contest, and the story was she wanted to wait till the All-Star game was in Indy.
Yep.
Well, it is. It's just not the NBA one, right? Events are for the WNBA.
WNBA in July.
Okay.
That's her All-Star game. Of course you should be there.
Yeah. And it brings more intrigue for anybody that wants to see it because it would be the first time that she does it. So instead of doing it and then be like, oh, we already saw that.
Because there were internet stories she didn't want to do it off the ball rack because her regular shooting routine is catch and shoot. When she's doing it in practice, she didn't want to do it off the ball rack. But she wants to do it in front of her friends and the Denton Stalker in Indianapolis. So,
I like a good rack.
Is that right? Mm-hmm.
All right, we're back tomorrow.
Oh. I'm a big fan of that. You just grab it.
Hey, did it clear up while you guys were driving in with the weather? Get better?
It's on and off.
Sure.
Right? Is rain hard or sprinkle? And kind of, wouldn't you say that?
Yeah. I lost my gutter last night.
You lost your gutter?
Yeah, my gutter fell off. That's
an easy fix.
Yeah.
Who's going to fix it?
Aaron Plano. It's going to get fixed in our
room. Yeah, you'll just need to get a step ladder.
Yeah.
I had a great step ladder.
Are you a good handyman?
I never knew my real ladder.
Hit the button.
You did it.
So bad.